Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
So how are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing very well, Justin. Thank you for asking.
Awesome. Do we have any thank yous?
I want to give a special shout out to Gretchen for making a cross stitch for us. And I hope I get your name right. Sorry if I don't. I met a lot of people, but the cross stitch you made that says, how you doing tonight, Aaron? And then says Generation Y. It's very cool. I put it up on Instagram. So if you are on Instagram, check it out. Go to @GenerationYPodcast and check that out. It's really cool. And very nice of her to do that for us. I also want to say a thank you to Christine LeBron. She asked for a shout out and I handed her my phone just so she could write a note to me on there. And she's just really sweet. And it was great to meet her and her sister, Kat. So a shout out to them as well. And I also want to thank all of the people we met at CrimeCon. I mean, I can't name you all individually, but whether you're a podcaster or a speaker of some kind, if you are an attendee, every one of you, it was a pleasure to meet. So a shout out as a whole to everyone we dealt with or met at CrimeCon.
Absolutely. It was so much fun. And we're putting out a little Patreon episode about it. So go check it out.
That episode will go out to all Patreon members.
So what is the topic for tonight?
It had been quite a long time since we covered a disappearance. So I wanted to include a disappearance on our schedule. And I kind of started by looking at top 10 lists or top whatever lists of people that have gone missing. A lot of the same names kept popping up. But on one list, I saw a name that I hadn't seen anywhere else. And that's Robin Renee Abrams, who was from Beecher, Illinois.
Now, this happened in 1990, so this is an older case. The weird thing about it, it's not a simple missing persons case. There's so much more to it than just somebody disappeared. But before we start, I want to thank Ed from the Unfound podcast for getting us in connection with Robin's sister. And if you want to hear a interview with Robin's sister, Jody, you can check out the Unfound podcast. On October 4th, 1990, Robin Abrams is seen by her father as they drive past each other. They wave to each other. They were on Goodnow Road, and it was the early evening in Beecher, Illinois. She is never seen again. The next day, 7 a.m., October 5th, the next morning, the family gets a phone call from the police department saying that they've found her 1989 Dodge Daytona about an hour away in Harvey. The keys are still in the ignition, and there's a camera inside the car, but no trace of Robin at the scene. They will end up finding Robin's purse about three blocks from where her car was found. They'll find that the credit cards are missing, but they won't be used anywhere. The investigators will keep searching, but the family feels like they already know what's happened. As soon as they heard that Robin's car was found and there was no Robin inside of it, they said, "That means Tony got her." So who's Tony, Aaron?
Tony is Anthony Marquez, who was a police officer at the time. He and Robin had been dating, and he encouraged her to join the police force. He was an auxiliary police officer, but they worked for the sheriff's office, the Will County Sheriff's Office. And somewhere along the line, I think it was toward the end of about a five-month period, Robin discovered that he was married. And for her, that's a no-no. She wasn't going to continue the relationship if he was already spoken for. After that, things went south.
She had to break it off with him. He didn't like that. And they would get into arguments about this. According to Robin's family, he would stalk her and harass her. I guess we should just back up a little bit here. I mean, you got a pretty good picture now of how this disappearance went down. So let's go into who Robin was and talk about her and how she became a police officer.
At the time, Robin was 28 years old, and she had three sisters. They were in order: Donna, Jody, Karen, and Robin. Robin was the youngest. Donna was the oldest. Several of the sisters were really close. They hung out all the time. They did a lot of things together. And as they got older, Robin got a degree from Governor State, and she paid her own way.
She worked full-time at McDonald's to put herself through college. That's determination.
They say that she really wanted to be a lawyer, but law enforcement was the direction she headed in, at least at the time. Maybe it would be a transition at some point.
Her father was a police officer, so this isn't too far-fetched for her to want to get into law enforcement. And when she meets Anthony, Tony Marquez, he says, "Hey, you should apply. You should do this."
They say Robin was probably the sweetest person you would ever meet. I know you hear that a lot, but you could just ask any one of her nieces or nephews, because she took a lot of time out of her schedule to take them places, shopping or to Cubs games, getting pictures. She really was invested in her family. So it's not just us saying that. There are a lot of people, some of whom wrote in to let us know that she is definitely someone who they thought highly of. And there are a lot of people out there whose lives were affected by her disappearance.
I get that. I mean, I don't have kids of my own, so I spoil the hell out of my niece. That's what you do when you don't have kids. You focus on the kids that are in your life.
Tony was quite a bit older. He was in his 40s, and so there was, somewhere between a 16 and 20-year age difference between the two.
Tony was friends with all the other officers. They had a supervisor named John, who I don't know if he was a sheriff or a chief, but he was in charge of their squad, their team. And they were a tight-knit group, but there were not a lot of female officers working there. So Robin was one of few.
Robin became a sheriff's deputy. She didn't know that Tony was married. And from what I understand, talking with some of her sisters, they didn't really know a lot about their relationship. They just knew that you couldn't really tell her what to do. She was 28 years old. So when things started going south, I don't think anybody was prepared for it. They hadn't had it in their mind that Tony was someone that they needed to look out for, or that Robin was going to be in any danger.
After their breakup, the family saw a downward spiral of Robin and Tony. At one point, Tony punched Robin in the face in front of her own mother. Robin's tires were slashed multiple times. Wonder who did that. And then Robin's mother's tires were even slashed at one point. There was an incident with a baseball bat between them and Tony. Robin would press charges against him for it. But when the court date came up, it was changed all of a sudden. Robin's family believes that John, the supervisor, called in a favor to the judge or the court to have that court date changed and not inform anybody about it. So when Robin and her mother showed up, they said, well, that court date already happened. So all charges were dropped against Tony. Just before Robin would be off her probation period and become a full-time law enforcement officer, she will be let go by the department.
Before she's let go, over a month before she's let go or fired, she is called in for a disciplinary hearing. And just so you understand what's going on here, obviously there's harassment between the two of them. There's damage to property. There are threats. The chief deputy contacts her and says, you need to come in for a disciplinary hearing. And that's for November 3rd. So this comes in the day before that, because they've been telling her to tone it down, to stop doing what she's doing. One of the things that she's doing is she's constantly telling people about how she dated a married man. That married man just happens to be Tony Marquez. And this is causing a lot of turmoil within the sheriff's office.
It's putting a bad name on the department. So they want her to shut up, pretty much.
Now it's later in December, I think it's the 21st, she is told that because she didn't listen, even though she was warned, she's no longer going to be a deputy sheriff. It says, after review of your file, it has been determined that you have failed to meet the expectations of a member of this department. You are hereby dismissed from employment with this department, effective immediately.
And because it's during her probational period, they can just do this. I mean, I think they could just do it. It's at will employment anyways, but they wanted to get this done before she was a full-time officer. She will file a lawsuit because she's not down with this.
So in November 1989 is when she's warned. Late December of 1989, she's let go or fired. And it's right after that that she files this federal lawsuit against Marquez and seven other members of the sheriff's department, alleging wrongful termination, harassment, violation of civil rights. And she's seeking $50,000 in compensation and another $500,000 in punitive damages.
This ramps up the harassment and abuse that's coming her way via Tony and some of his other friends in the department. One day, a investigator for the police department named Steve will hear a ruckus happening out in his driveway, and he will go outside to see what's happening, and he will see Robin being dragged out of her Dodge Daytona, being handcuffed and roughed up, and he'll say, what's going on? And they'll say, oh, she was doing something stupid, so we have to take care of her. And one of the police officers actually says, somebody ought to kill that bitch. This is coming from Steve, the investigator with the Will County Department. There is another incident where she's arrested and she's taken to the jail, the holding area. And Tony speaks with the jailer, the lead guy in charge. And they decide to put Robin in a cell with 10 other male prisoners who are all in there for felony charges. And they leave her in this cell around 8 hours. I'm sure that was just a clerical issue, right? Putting a female in with 10 other males in a holding cell. What do you think, Aaron?
There's no other way to put it. It's disgusting.
By the end of this, Tony and the Will County Police Department will have racked up 105 charges against Robin. And this ranges from her taillights being out to reckless driving to whatever they come up with. And you got to realize that this is kind of a rural area, so there's not a lot going on. I won't say it's a small town, but they don't have much else to do but mess with Robin, apparently. So Robin and her mother will go in to court to address these 105 charges. They will immediately throw out all but two of them. And on those last two charges, I'm pretty sure the judge finds her not guilty. And then the judge goes on to do something else. He says, I'm going to grant you an order of protection against Anthony Marquez. So the judge is actually on Robin's side, and he's trying to throw this poor woman a bone and say, I'm going to give you a protection order. So Tony cannot come around Robin. But who's going to enforce that protection order, Aaron? When the psycho ex-boyfriend comes around, who are you going to call? That's right, you're going to call the police. Who is the police? That's right, the same guy that's supposed to not be around her.
This is such a horrible situation. For people that have heard our Josephine County 911 episode, which is a premium episode, there's nothing worse than being told that there's nothing we can do for you. This is a similar situation in that the people who are there to help her are the very people who are causing her issues. So she has no assistance here. She's pretty much up the creek without a paddle, I would say.
Yeah, and it's sad to see these officers kind of turn on one of their own. It actually reminded me of another situation that happened down in Florida where a female police officer named Donna Watts pulled over an off-duty cop who was flying down the highway at, I think it was like 120 miles per hour without his lights on. And she did a traffic stop and issued him a ticket. And after that, she noticed that she was being followed home by different squad cars. She noticed that there would be weird cars parked out in front of her house. She would get weird phone calls to her home and to her office. And so she did a public records request, and she found that her personal information had been accessed thousands of times by 88 different police officers from 25 different agencies. I mean, what's going on here? This isn't acceptable at all. Robin's being stalked by a police officer, and other police officers are assisting him, are in on it. I don't know any other way to put it besides that.
Yeah, but I don't think they see her as one of their own, because when Marquez met her, it was because she was working at a McDonald's. Now, remember, she worked her way through college. She was working at McDonald's full time. And that's where Tony met her. He's the one that said, hey, you should become a police officer. So I think for these other guys, they're just like, oh, he brought his girlfriend to work.
Yeah, maybe so.
I don't know how else you can look at it, because I do know this. Police officers, they support each other. And if she was really a peer, I think they would have supported her as well. But I don't think they saw her as a peer at all.
Robin, at one point before her disappearance, will actually take some of her family members out to Tony Marquez's insurance company, his office where he works. And she says, if anything happens to me, you need to investigate Tony. And here's where he works. Here's all of his information. She took the time to inform all of her family that if something happens to her, this is the guy that did it.
Right. She took her mother, Barbara, and her sister, Donna, out there. And I think this is this is difficult really to evaluate. It's easy in hindsight to look back and say, wait a minute, that should have been a huge warning sign right there that her life was in danger. But I don't know exactly what was going through their minds at the time. Now, I spoke with Donna and I tried to get a sense of it, but all I can say is that it really clicked later when her sister Robin goes missing. She thinks back to that time and it has to haunt her. It's, you know, Donna's not at fault. Jody's not at fault. No one really knows what the future holds. And there are plenty of bad relationships where people are really nasty to one another. But it's when she goes missing, I think it's that time when they were told, hey, if I go missing, this is the guy that's responsible. That's why they go straight to murder. When they find her car abandoned with the keys in the ignition, then that's it. That's murder to them because their sister wouldn't run away.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Now, the investigators, they'll look into her disappearance. They'll actually find that she stopped at a local gas station that day and that Tony stopped at that same gas station, same day. They will find a witness who saw Robin's car being dropped off. Now, this witness was looking through a window from his house. It was a cul-de-sac. And he will say that a tow truck drove up, two men got out, and dropped off the red Dodge Daytona that belongs to Robin. Now, Jody, Robin's sister, will say that later on, and I'm saying later on because you're going to find out some more information here that's going to be really interesting, but later on, investigators will tell her that the witness that saw the car getting dropped off would go on to actually identify the two men that dropped the car off. The investigators will tell Jody and the family that the camera that was found inside the car didn't have any film in it, but they will say that there was evidence found in the car and they collected that evidence. Now, this is Will County is collecting this evidence, but then they will turn this whole case over to the Illinois State Police. They will return that car back to the dealership. They don't hold on to it. They just give it back. Got it?
Well, they extracted whatever evidence they could find from the vehicle, so they no longer had a use for it.
we have a car that's been dropped off by two men. So obviously she didn't run away. We can assume that foul play is happening here, right?
Right. Well, the area it gets dropped off in is known to be a not so great area. Since the vehicle was dropped off by two men and just abandoned there, I think right there, that should totally kill off any idea that she ran away.
I would say so. It is said from Jody and the investigators that the witness that saw the tow truck will be able to identify Tony and his stepbrother, John Romo. So here we go. She's gone. Her car has been dropped off. It's said that Tony was witnessed at the same gas station as her. And another witness is saying that her car has been dropped off, and it's alleged that he can identify the two men that dropped her car off. What happens for the next 20 years, Aaron?
Well, absolutely nothing. It seems like
20 years go by.
But it's not as though nothing's happening. Her family absolutely wants answers. And I know that her dad was trying to get answers. He was a police officer. But it seemed like they met with a lot of resistance from the Will County Sheriff's Office.
And the Illinois State Police, who were handling the case. They said they didn't have any leads. They've exhausted all leads and were waiting for a body to show up.
Well, I guess now's a good time to talk about, can you prosecute people for a crime if there is no body?
You absolutely can, but it's hard.
I believe that it's gotten easier, and that's through a lot of hard work by a lot of lawyers and investigators. But in this case, with no body, they don't want to charge anybody. It almost seems like they don't want to even investigate anybody. And what would lead us to think that?
I don't know. Maybe because it was one of their own. There is a lot of reasons why they might not want to investigate this.
Well, I think we know exactly why they don't want to. Needless to say, she had filed that lawsuit, but because she never showed up, they had to drop the lawsuit.
What they didn't do is really interview any of the people named in that lawsuit, because that's not motive at all, right? That's just, why would they do that? They do, however, try to go after Anthony Marquez and his stepbrother, John Romo. What happens with that, Aaron?
The evidence collected from the car, we don't have exactly what it is, but because these two are suspects, they want to either confirm or eliminate them as being the possible parties responsible for what happened to Robin.
People of interest, because they were never labeled suspects.
Just right, we do have to be careful with that. They're not suspects. They're people of interest.
I don't know how they're not suspects, but they're not suspects.
It sounds like the same thing to me, but definitely the language was very specific. Now, in this case, a grand jury issues subpoenas. And so Tony Marquez and John Romo are supposed to appear in a lineup. They're supposed to submit palm prints and fingerprints, blood and head and pubic hair samples to the grand jury. But this doesn't quite happen.
No, they fight it. They sue. And they win.
Right. In the end, the court decides that because they're not being charged with any crime, that you can't violate their rights.
Okay. So they couldn't prove probable cause. They couldn't get what they needed. I can think of a lot of doctors that have murdered their wives that I guess should be let go, because there's not enough evidence or anything to go after these people. I mean, even Stephen Avery, he didn't have nearly the history with Teresa Halbach that Tony had with Robin.
What? No, it's true. You look over this case and it's a really simple timeline, a very simple path you can follow, where you see two people who got together and then by the end, harassment charges, arrests, lawsuits,
order of protection.
And then one of the parties disappears and there's no connection.
No connection. There's nothing there, Aaron.
They can't follow this. The sheriff's office, the state police, they don't see, I guess, what the public sees, because the public very much sees a woman who was harassed. She was beaten, arrested, and ultimately disappeared. And yet none of the authorities have any idea how this may have happened.
Oh, no leads.
The officers, Tony Marquez and the others, some of them were pretty tight. They were all friends. And it's because they went to school together. And you know how that goes. If you're friends, then you kind of have each other's backs, right?
Exactly.
So I'm not trying to say that they definitely did this. I'm just saying, if we're looking for persons of interest, damn if they don't just stand out like a blinking red light in the night.
In 1996, there's a guy by the name of Art Burchett, and he's not a good guy. He deals illegal guns, different things. He also happens to be good friends with Tony. He gets in trouble. He gets arrested for whatever it is, and he knows he's going to have to serve some time. So he says, hey, I have some information for you if you want to do a deal. I know the whereabouts of Robin's body and where it was buried. Again, still no leads, but the investigators will at least follow this lead up a little bit. And they find out that Art is affiliated with another family that owns a tow truck business. No connection there. And Art will give them the location of a shallow grave where he says Robin Abrams is buried. Property owner, he'll say that a car came to the property and left. It appears that there is a freshly dug grave. So he thinks that this has something to do with Robin's disappearance. I think it's more than he thinks, it's something he knows. Steve, the lead investigator, you remember Steve? He was the officer that heard a ruckus in his driveway and came out to see Robin being beaten by Tony and other police officers that said they wanted to kill her. He was the one that handed this over to the Illinois Police Department. Him and other investigators go out to check out this lead where Art is saying Robin has been buried. A deputy by the name of John Moss is there waiting on the property when the investigators show up. And he says that the search warrant that they have obtained does not allow them to search where Art has said the body's been buried. He says they can't go dig there. They can dig around the house, but they can't go dig where Art says the body is. I don't understand that at all, but they comply. They dig around and they find nothing because, well, that's not where they're really looking, right? It doesn't make any sense. It's just they're going through the motions because this other deputy is telling them they can't dig because of the wording of a search warrant or something to that effect.
It is getting easier to prosecute no body murder cases, but the only way that they can really make it happen is you need cooperation between the people who are coming in, whether they're forensic pathologists or groups. There are groups across America and probably in other countries where different experts get together and try to solve cases where there are no bodies. But you need cooperation with the investigators who are working the case. And when you don't get that cooperation, you can't move forward. And in this case with Robin Abrams, it's happened a number of times where different experts have come in and said, you know, I think we can solve this. And then the state police will just say, nah, we don't need any help.
Yeah, they refuse all help. They tell the family that if they continue doing this, they're more apt to screw up the investigation. I'm wondering what investigation. This happened in 1990. well, what's happening? What are they doing? What are they going to screw up, you know?
Now, on one hand, you could say, look, everybody could have an ego here. They don't want anyone solving a case that they didn't solve. What are you doing here? You're not even from here. But if you go the other route where it's, yeah, we don't want your help because maybe they don't want it solved. I'm not saying that's the case here, but what are we looking at? There's two possibilities, right? Either their egos are preventing help from happening to where they can solve this case, or maybe they just don't want outside help because they don't want it solved.
Let's call a spade a spade. It's either total corruption and a cover-up or total incompetence. You choose. There's no other explanation here.
But neither of these options makes you feel good. You know, there's, I don't even know which one would be an upside. If you have to pick one, maybe it's just incompetence because they can't figure it out. They can't figure out what they're supposed to do. So that's why it's not moving forward. But
now they're obstructing justice by not allowing anyone else to investigate or move forward with the case. So 2012, a private detective and ex-law enforcement officer by the name of Cindy, I won't give her whole name, she reaches out to Robin's family and she gives them all of this information because the family's been completely in the dark. They have not known what's happening. They did not know that there were witnesses that saw the tow truck drop the car off. They did not know about the burial site. They knew none of this. Police officers shared zilch with them. And every time they'd call and get a follow-up, they just took law enforcement's word that it was being investigated and they were doing all they could. They had no idea that they actually had a lot of direct evidence linking the person who they knew from the start was probably responsible for this. They didn't know. Now they're finding out that law enforcement had all this information the entire time. And they're pissed. They weren't allowed to dig in the right area. So the family wants to go there. And when they went to the other property, they found a shallow depression where Art said the body was buried. They get another tip from their website. They didn't want to say who it was from, but they're assuming that it was somebody from The Patch, which is a local newspaper or journalist, who says that there's another property that they think Robin is on now because there was too much of a close call at that other one. So now there's a new property, a man living there. Jody referred to him as Jeff, and there is a officer Soshi who is farming on the land, and he has a team that helps him farm, but this Jeff guy, he buys up the property, but he gives them permission to continue working the land. But Jeff wants to build out behind his house, and he is unable to get a permit to build this structure. And when he starts complaining about this, Jeff will tell people that he's getting harassment by Deputy Soshi. And one night, there's a drive-by shooting on his house. Somebody shoots his house up. Again, this is out in the farming community of Illinois. There's not a lot of street gangs out here doing drive-bys. So what's happening? Jeff's house will eventually just be burned down, and the reasons for the fire will not be found out. January 8th, 2014. So Jeff's house is burned down. Being that this is the tip of where Robin's body was moved to, and then this guy is harassed. I mean, you could look at this and say, well, maybe it was a property dispute between him and the deputy or him and the farmers and has nothing to do with Robin. It's possible, you know, we can throw that out there maybe, but he's had a lot of issues now with the Will County Police Department, and his house has been burned down and he can't get a permit to rebuild his house. So this happened over 3 years ago now, and his house is still a burned hulk of a building.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/genY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/genY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/genY.
Again, the cops will not allow Jody or the family to go out and do searches on the property. Because, you know, when you, if you were at CrimeCon, you saw the search and rescue dogs, those organizations, they work hand in hand with law enforcement and they need law enforcement's backing to do what they do. And without it, they won't get involved in these cases. They're not able to investigate. And Jeff said, yeah, you can go out there. It's cool. But no, they're not allowed to. Again, it just seems like more obstruction.
Well, yeah, it's obstruction, but then you might say, oh, well, it's bad luck, right? Or there's something else going on there. It's not necessarily tied to Robin's case. But when you start looking at every turn, it's like every turn is
a connection. It's somebody that knew Tony. It's a friend of his. It's all tied together. But is it tied together because it's a small town with a small police force? Or is it tied together because it's a real situation and these people are covering for each other?
A real conspiracy.
Yeah.
You and I are real fond of that word, right?
Yeah. I mean, I hate conspiracies. I hate cover-ups. And any time that somebody says, oh, this is a cover-up or this is a conspiracy, I shoot it down immediately. And even this case, I don't want to believe it. But if I believe that this isn't a cover-up or a conspiracy, then I have to accept the fact that this is the worst investigation I've ever seen in my life. I have to accept the fact that this is the most incompetent police force I've ever seen. If you were to give these guys a Yelp review for this case, what would it be? 1 star? I mean, they don't tell the family anything. And then it takes other outsiders to give the family the information that they've received from Freedom of Information Act. Now the family's up to speed. And they realize how in the dark they've been and how much this case has been just stale. Let's just recap real quick. She had a history with Tony. She had 105 charges placed against her. All were thrown out. There are multiple witnesses that put her and Tony together that day. There's even a witness that saw her car dropped off by a tow truck, and it said that he identified the men that dropped her car off. A man named Art, who is friends with people that own a tow truck company, says he knows where her body's buried, but they're not allowed to search there. Years later, they try to search another property, but that man's house is burnt down. Is this just the worst luck ever? I don't even have words.
Or is it a conspiracy?
I can't cancel out a conspiracy at this point. This is like the first time I'll be like, you know, if they would have tried harder, if they would have engaged the family, if they would have, I don't know, interrogated these guys, dude, they can find probable cause pulling you over for nothing and get you out of your car, take you in for questioning. Now you might be asking, well, where was Tony that day, that night? Well, he has an alibi. He says he was with his friends and family, and they all vouch for him. That's airtight, right?
Well, we talked about conspiracies before that we kind of subscribe to. I'm fond of saying that I think, for example, Waco, I think the authorities just got tired of waiting for David Koresh to have his talk with God so that he would give himself up. But in this case, I really don't want to call all of these law enforcement officers incompetent. I really don't want to, because I think that's just too easy. It's too dismissive. I think there's a chance here that there is a conspiracy. I don't know that I can prove it, but I think if you look at the pattern of the way things go at every turn, kind of looks like a conspiracy to me.
If you were to talk to Robin Abrams' family, they absolutely believe there is one. They absolutely think that law enforcement has gone against them at every turn. And why wouldn't they? You can say, well, you know, they didn't have a body, so they can't really do much. And, oh, the guy's alibi checked out. Oh, it's hearsay. But we've seen other cases get indicted, prosecuted, and sentenced with way less than this one. Now, I know there's been some movement on the case more recently, and that's really because elections happen, different chiefs of police get in power, and they're more open because they don't seem to have the same grudge against this family or the same ties to different police officers or judges. So they look into it. So what's happened lately?
Well, just this year, in 2017, the authorities dug up the foundation of a Joliet, Illinois home. And they say that this came about because of some new information, some tips that were called in.
Do you know who is connected to this property?
Like we said, the foundation was dug up. The company that poured that concrete in that home was run by John Romo. And so there's the connection. And so he had access to that property. Now, in order to dig up the foundation, the current homeowners had to be moved out for quite a while. They spent some real time there.
There was the first property that they feel that she was buried at. And then there's the second property where the house was burned down. And then this house that they tore up the foundation on was a recent construction job or concrete job by John Romo. So I got to give them a little bit of credit. At least they're going with these two men, but they did do some investigation. They just did not inform the family about anything, and they followed nothing up. And now, over 20 years later, here we are trying to solve a murder. And these two men have been walking around free. All of these police officers with Will County who took part in 105 bogus charges against a woman who is now missing are all living their lives. Illinois, they are usually in the top 10 murder rate of the nation, and they're leading the way with the lowest murder clearance rate of the nation. When I say murder clearance rate, that means solved murders or homicides. So 1 in 3 to 1 in 4 murders in Illinois are solved. 1 in 3. Okay? So knowing this, you can start to maybe understand why that is. Looking at this case and comparing their murder rate, I sort of understand why they don't solve a lot of murders there.
Speaking with Robin's sisters, it seems like their one wish at this point, if they could have one, is they would like to recover their sister's body and put her to rest, because they've had her ripped from their lives and then they have nothing left of her. They just have pictures. They have memories. But they need some way to have, I guess I always call it attempted closure, because I don't think you truly have closure. But if you could get at least this answer of where was she? Where is she? And it really feels like they're being denied that. And as many of you know, as soon as there's a feeling of injustice in a case where you're not permitted to have closure, you're not permitted to have answers, it's very frustrating, because where do you turn? And in this case, it feels like there's no one to turn to. When a person's missing and you don't have a body to bury, I get the sense, you know, speaking to Robin's family, that they're dealing with wounds that have not healed. They can't heal. And if they could finally bury her and say their proper goodbyes, I think that would go a long way towards helping them heal.
We can just hope that future law enforcement in their area is more sympathetic to a family who has lost a loved one, have been waiting for justice 27 years.
And some of them weren't around long enough to wait for it. Sadly, Robin's parents have both passed, and so they went to their graves not knowing whether she would ever get justice or not.
So thank you to Robin's sisters, Jody and Donna, for reaching out to us. Thank you, Ed, at the Unfound Podcast for making that happen. And if you guys want to hear an interview with Jody, go check out his episode. It was released about a year ago.
I'd like to end this episode by reading the missing poster for Robin Abrams. Robin Abrams, missing since October 4th, 1990 from Beecher, Illinois. She was a white female, age 28 in 1990. She was 5'4", about 125 pounds. Her hair was brown, eyes hazel, and she had pierced ears. She was a former Will County deputy sheriff, last seen driving on a rural Will County Road, which was Goodnow Road, by her father. And 11 hours later, her car was found in Harvey, Illinois. If you have information, you are encouraged to contact the Illinois State Police.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.